What do I do every time I see you? Get a feeling at the drop of a hat, I would do what you ask me to. Well, I don't know if you know it's true, but just the same, who's to blame? I'm a fool, I don't know.
What Do I Do from the CD Bring It On Down by the Red Stick Ramblers. I played it just because it makes me smile. You're listening to BBS Radio. I'm Sherry Edwards, your host for the next hour of Sound Health, a connection designed to brighten your day and add to your life ideas and information about self-health and self-healing. Oh, our guest today is Dr. David Wolf. He's the author of Relationships That Work, The Power of Conscious Living. We'll be with him in just a few moments after these announcements. The first announcement is that I accidentally got hit in the face today. I bit my tongue and it's swollen, so I don't quite sound like myself. I'm not really under the influence of anything except an elbow and a jaw. Okay, that's the first announcement. Second announcement. As many of you know, the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology sponsors Sound Health, and we conduct research about sound and its influence on living systems, including the use of sound to help the body reverse its own disease. We work with many medical practitioners, and you can look at many of our profiles on Nutrasound, NutraSound.com. We're a nonprofit research organization, and today I want to publicly thank all of you who have had the vision to see that what we're doing is the medicine of the future. Thank you for your emails and letters and donations, especially the donations. But we're finding a problem, a strange phenomenon going on. We plan to use part of the donations as scholarships to help people take our classes and learn how to take a vocal print and use it to help people self-heal. For those of you who are new listeners, we do things like take a vocal print and then give the sounds back to people that don't quite match in their vocal print. And we've been able to reverse things like macular degeneration, which is an eye disease that's supposedly impossible to reverse, and emphysema, multiple sclerosis, autism, things like that. So we're a small group here, and we wanted to start to train people to begin to do this and take it to their own families, their communities, and we wanted to use these donations as matching scholarships. You know, we're having a hard time giving them away. People don't believe we want to give them a scholarship to come and take this class. And we really need providers and trainers. And they can't even believe it. We have free classes. We have free computer programs. And people suspect that. I guess I need to put a price tag on things, and then people think, oh, I'm paying for it, so it has to be okay. But for those of you who want the computer program, the free one that helps you take a sample of your voice and look at your personality and how you really feel about things, you can go to Nano, N-A-N-O, Voice, Nano Voice, one word, .org, nanovoice.org. And just download the free program, and the manual's right there, and there's a free class. And if you want to take our classes, some of them free, some of them for professionals, some of them start your own business, you can write to us at class@vocalprofiling.com, and you can sign up for the free classes. And we also have the classes right online, so you don't even have to join us. You can just download the thing and watch it. So for those of you who are interested in doing that, looking at our public site, our free videos, and audios and information. That's Nutra Sounds, N-U-T-R-A, Sounds, that's plural, .com, or for your research people, JBAB, J-B-A-B, .org. That's Journal of Bioacoustic Biology. Just remember, just as bad apple boy, and you'll get it. And we are not going to be giving away this NanoVoice software forever, so I would suggest that you find it on the nanovoice.org and download it now. So beginning November, it's not going to be free anymore. Okay, that's enough from our wonderful sponsor. Dr. David Wolf is our guest today, and he's the author of Relationships That Work, The Power of Conscious Living. Dr. Wolf, thank you for joining us today, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sherry.
What made you write a book like this?
Did we need it?
Are we bad? We don't have good relationships?
Well, it's not bad. Actually, the basis of the book is, I'll call it a spiritual basis. And the nature of spirit is to be fulfilled, satisfied. I don't really come from a place of need. But the nature of spirit is to expand. And so even if we consider that, hey, I'm pretty effective at communication, that the book provides principles, exercises, techniques, skills to enrich, to enhance our communication and our fulfillment, not just in relationships, but our relationship with ourselves, our fulfillment in all areas of life. And I've been teaching seminars, workshops on this sort of thing for really close to 30 years, back to the early 80s. And especially in the past 10 years or so, I've been traveling around the world conducting the Sattva Tov seminars. These are some seminars I developed, personal growth, self-realization. And so people who've been through my workshops, they've encouraged me to write a book. And so I've been writing articles over the years, and so I decided to commit to put it in book form.
It is a beautiful book, full of exercises that really get down to the behavior of how to do this stuff. I want to ask you about this little notice on the front. This is a carbon neutral book. What does that mean?
Well, that's something that the publisher put on to show that the production of the book is ecologically and environmentally friendly. And so that the production of the book itself, actually, I'm not able to give details about the technology of it, but when I got the book, I was glad that the publisher produced it in a way that is environmentally enhancing rather than destructive.
Well, it is. It's a beautiful book inside and out. We also take questions from our audience, so we'll ask you a few, and then our audience will probably start emailing or calling us to see what's going on. Most of our people email because they're using their phone line for their computer.
Okay.
To listen to the show. Yeah. Can you think of anything bigger than relationships, good or bad, that make the world go round?
Relationships. Well, relationships are really at the core, at the center, whether it's relationships with other persons, spirit, soul, relationship with the Supreme. Actually, when we decided upon this title, Relationships That Work, my focus was not just relationships in the ordinary sense of the term, but relationship with nature, relationship with self, relationship with abundance, relationship with health. And so we're so interdependent with each other and with universal forces that relationships are so all-pervading. Yeah, what could be more important?
We have a question already. This is from Scott, and it just says, high school, how do you get through without being emotionally beaten to a pulp at one time or another? The other tends to thrive on digging the knife in. And that's really all it says. Sometimes people send me really long emails, but that's a nice short one.
Yes. High school can be very distressing and stressful and intimidating and fearful, like so many phases of life. Now with the economy, so many people are feeling more stress and pressure than usual. Oh, that Scott is writing about high school. And so, okay, so in the book, in my workshop, we focus a lot. And when I say we focus experientially. Like you mentioned, the exercises in the book, it's not just something theoretical or abstract. But we focus on choice, accountability, that adopting a perspective, 100% responsibility for my experience of life and my contribution to life. Meaning, what goes on outside, well, that might go on, and sometimes people might be kind or fair, sometimes unkind. And so being, let's say, a master of personal transformation, it means I'm fully at choice about how I respond to that. I can respond with fear, I can respond with humor, I can respond with power, I can respond by becoming deeply damaged for 20 years of my life. And so we focus on techniques. A big part of the book and my teachings are about, well, conscious living, meaning that we take a look at our conditioning. We take a look at what areas of our life are we on automatic? Are we simply being reactive? And by shining the light of awareness on that, then we open up to different possibilities. Like, oh, in these particular situations, maybe with my parents, or maybe with older classmates, or maybe with women, or maybe in the work environment, in these particular situations, I practically automatically go into resentment and bitterness. And so what we do in the process of transformative communication is we look at what other possibilities are there for my response.
So, choice, accountability, do you think that comes from parents or church or TV or movies or?
Yeah. Well, certainly, these are all influences. There's a saying that the past can explain a lot about my present, but it can't take responsibility for it. And so, yeah, my parents and my upbringing and the way my teachers treated me and the religious or spiritual upbringing I had, that certainly explains a lot about why I am the way I am. Still, at each given moment, I'm fully responsible for my responses, whatever my conditioning. And we see that, for example, let's say, there's so many examples of, let's say, many people who were abused as children. They grow up and they abuse other children. Okay, that's common. At the same time, we know there are many people who had similar experiences. They were also mistreated, abused as children, and they grow up and they choose to take that experience and they become champions to prevent child maltreatment. So we certainly are influenced by our association and our upbringing. At the same time, where we're focusing in transformative communication is whatever my influence is, let me acknowledge it, let me be aware of it, and let me empower myself to make choices. How do I want to respond in this moment? I'm not a slave of my past.
Now, I used to talk to my kids, and my kids are in their 40s now, about the bullies at school and that these children were only repeating what their parents taught them.
Mm.
So it was the responsibility of my children to try to teach them another way.
Mm.
But, you know, I don't think it's parents anymore. There's so much on TV, good and bad,
yes,
to teach people, kids, conflict resolution. But there's also a lot of smart mouthness on TV.
Oh, yes.
That
yes.
really is not helpful to us as a humanity in getting along with each other.
Yeah.
And I just got an email from Karen, and I'm trying to kind of put the pieces together because it's long. When struggling to put food on the table and working two jobs, most time there's no time to think about cultivating relationships. Are there groups that can help my kids when I don't have time to? Boy, that says a lot behind those words.
Mm. Yes, yeah. And like when you were talking, Sherry, about, like, I could hear how you inculcated the value of compassion, the value of compassion in your children, that, okay, that the bullies at school, this and that. You were like training your children to respond with compassion. And we can hear you just read a letter in the writer of that, Karen, we could hear the suffering, the pain, almost a sense of, you know, almost like she's not wanting to become hopeless, but she's really in a very painful situation, feeling very distressed, and she's especially concerned about her children.
There are churches a lot of the times that have groups.
Yes.
And some communities have timeout groups.
Yes.
Do you discuss any of that in your book, Help for the Single Parent? Because she sounds like a single parent.
Yes, yes. And so, well, what we're endeavoring to do is to create communities in all sectors of society, irregardless of economic or social status or occupation, where people are committed to develop expertise in these principles. People are committed to excellence in communication. And see, again, we call the system transformative communication, but it's more than just like, it's not just like a set of techniques or something. It's actually an approach to self-realization. And that's key because our nature is spiritual, which means our intrinsic qualities are that we're fulfilled, satisfied, complete, radiant, loving, like that. And so, if we can learn how to connect with these intrinsic spiritual qualities and sort of peel off the material coverings that prevent us from living as the spiritual beings we are, then whatever the external circumstance, we can be satisfied because that's our birthright. And everyone we touch, like a ripple effect, will also be influenced in that way. Whether it's our children, or we could transform our work environment or our community center. And so we want to create communities all throughout society, all throughout the world. I've taught these courses in more than a dozen countries throughout the world. We want to create communities where people are developing themselves in their personal growth, becoming skilled, refined in high-level communication techniques. Not just techniques. It said, like, for example, you mentioned church groups. There's a Christian philosopher, Paul Tillich, and he said, the first duty of love is to listen. Now, and when I talk about communication, people naturally think about how I express myself. In my workshops and seminars, before even talking about expressing ourselves, we talk about another side of communication, becoming an expert at listening. Becoming an expert at listening. The first duty of love is to listen. And just by mastering deep listening skills, we can change the whole environment within our relations.
I certainly appreciate that Karen took time out of her schedule to listen to us. I love it.
Yes, I am touched by that.
When you're talking about relationships in your book, are you talking about employer, employee, husband, wife, parent, child, us and our community, us and our God, us and our inner self? I mean, you touched on some, self, nature, abundance, health. But are these exercises something that a parent could use to help them with their children? Because that's been a relationship that's been complained about for decades, eons, centuries.
Yeah.
You know, that moving out of the nest kind of squabbling that happened.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, these are universal principles with a with a frustrating teenager or a irritating spouse or an enraged coworker or whatever. I'm just thinking of recently. One lady was actually in a 5-day workshop I taught. And after the first day, we just began to look at some of these skills. She had a small child, like 3 years old. And the small child was sort of going, the small child wanted something, and she didn't want to give it. And she said, normally, they would have gotten into tension. You can't have it. I want it. No, mommy said you can't. I want it. So then she thought, she's going to change the game, and she's going to do something different. And then she said, she said, I can see you're really mad. You're really mad at mommy. Yes, I am. Yes, I can see you really hate mommy now. Yes, I do. And she said it was amazing. Whereas normally they would have, the household would have been tense and angry for hours, a whole day. Her little son's anger was diffused within 30 seconds, and then he was smiling again because she showed that she understood.
Well, that's on page 87 of your book.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Handling broken agreements. You just acknowledge the person.
Yes.
Can you do that same kind of thing with adults, where you talk about these five things to put back together a broken relationship, a broken agreement, a broken communication?
Again, these are universal principles. I remember once I was working with the state of Florida as a children and family counselor and in the Department of Foster Care, and sometimes I would make recommendations, like recommend to the judge to keep a child in foster care. So one day, an irate father came in, and he was yelling at me and banging his fist. And so we can imagine different, you know, I could have yelled back, or I could have called the police, I could have warned him, like that. And so, instead of doing any of those things, I showed that I understood. I said, I can see you're furious at me, I can see you're enraged with me, because I recommended to the judge to keep your child in foster care. And he got even angrier. But then I continued to mirror back. This is a great way to show understanding. I mirrored back that I understood what he was saying and his feeling behind it. And it was especially challenging because the hostility was directed towards me. But I had enough emotional distance to kind of reflect back. And after 3 or 4 reflections, he was calm and civilized enough for us to have a rational conversation about the goal that we both wanted, which was to get his child returned back to him.
And his being outrageous was probably one of the reasons that the child didn't go back. But when you're talking about this, doesn't bring up the idea of in that relationship, it's who gets the control, who gets to control the situation, who gets to control the communication?
Yeah.
When you're talking about how to bring that about so that it's equal, you talk about accepting the responsibility, being accountable, apologizing, and amending. Can you go through the kind of steps using a scenario from your own practice?
Sure. Okay. Yes, and what you're referring to, it is right there on page 87, and that's strategies for handling broken agreements. And I appreciated, Sherry, you were talking about sound. You were talking about sound and the healing power of sound when it's effectively utilized. We deal a lot with that in my book and in my workshops. And in fact, my doctoral dissertation was about the effect of mantra meditation on relieving stress and depression. And I talk about that in the book, Relationships That Work. So that's one way of healing sound. Another thing, and this is what on page 87, what you were referring to, is it's said, you know, like in the Western tradition that in the beginning was the word, right? So that sound, that just as the Supreme creates with his word. Similarly, we can take a look at what are we creating in our life with our word. When we give our word, when we give our promise, our commitment, that when we keep our commitments and promises, then relationships tend to be strengthened, trust increases, confidence increases, things are clear, we feel loved and responsible. And when we tend to break our agreements, then the opposite happens. Things become unclear, our trust for ourselves and others goes down, our self-respect goes down, our respect for others goes down when they... So we focus a lot on our relationship with our word and how that affects our experience of life. Now, of course, we're not perfect. And so if we find that we do break our word, we have strategies for handling broken agreements in a way that restores our integrity. So this is one strategy called the five A's, what you just mentioned. The first A is to acknowledge, which means to acknowledge that I've broken agreement, right? Not to pretend I didn't. And part of acknowledgement is that empathy, to show that, to acknowledge I've broken agreement, and I understand that probably I've damaged our relationship because of this, and probably your trust for me has gone down. Probably that maybe you feel betrayed by me. So we acknowledge that. The second A is accept responsibility, which means I made an agreement and I responded in a particular way or neglected to respond in a particular way that resulted in me breaking my commitment to you. I'm not blaming. I'm not pointing the finger. I accept full responsibility. Now, the third A is we account. To account, that's where we explain what happened. Now, it's not defense. It's not rationalization or justification. I simply explain what happened. It might be, I said I would pay you back by the first of the month, and it's the 10th of the month. I used the money to pay my electric bill and whatever else. I just honestly explain what happened. Sometimes that might not show me in a flattering light. Maybe let's say, if I said I'll meet you at 10 and I get there at 11, well, did I keep my agreement? No. I acknowledge I have a broken agreement. I accept responsibility. What happened was I was on my way and I stopped on the side of the road and I saved someone's life. So I didn't keep my agreement, but in that particular case, there was actually even a higher principle. So whatever it is, whether it shows us in a complimentary light or not, we account for what happened. The fourth A is to apologize. Now, apologize, we note that this is the fourth A, because sometimes we make it like apologize is like the first and only A. It's like, I'm sorry. And that oftentimes apology, if, let's say, improperly used or misused, it can be more like, more about me wanting to look good rather than actually restoring and rectifying and repairing our relationship. Well, I said I'm sorry. It can be like a loophole so I can do it again. Okay? So apology and sincere remorse, of course, is integral in restoring relationships when we've broken our agreements. But it comes after acknowledging, accepting responsibility, and accounting for what happened, then naturally apologize. And the fifth A is amend. Amend means we offer to rectify. We offer to make amends in whatever way we can. Perhaps we'll invite the other person to suggest ways I could rectify or amend. We don't want to put the burden on the other person, but we might ask their suggestion. So that's the sort of thing we have in the book and in the seminars, these practical strategies for living with integrity so that our relationships are sources of enriched personal growth for each other.
But I think people really have problems with this number two, accepting the responsibility. They don't want to admit that they did something wrong. I took your brush or your shoe or whatever. Now, I heard somebody say the other day, I'm really sorry you feel hurt because I slapped you. That's such a backwards thing to be saying, I'm sorry you feel hurt that I slapped you.
Right, yeah.
You know, that's not an apology.
You're right.
Or
it's kind of just like, well, it's your problem and your fault for feeling hurt.
Yeah. Right. And so many people know I didn't do that. And you know darn well they did. But I want to bring up something that we did here at the Institute. we did a study on parents and their teenagers that weren't getting along, and we did their vocal prints. And we found out that the teenager had an overabundance of one of the parents' primary notes in their voice. So we looked at that, and you don't want an overabundance of notes, you know, too much of one note more than enough. So we're thinking, is this some kind of biological reaction to move the teenagers out of the nest?
Yes, yes. Or is
this really an emotional function? Now, I remember trying to go up against my parents and just getting slapped down emotionally, verbally, and I didn't even want to listen to them. It wasn't what they were saying, it was how they were saying it.
Right.
I think a bigger study ought to be done on that, because I think this is not teenagers just being very, very recalcitrant. I think it's a biological function to move them and allow them to sever the tie with the parents. But that's just my ideas about it. Let me give people the phone numbers.
Yes.
We've got some other emails here of some of our listeners, longtime listeners. But the phone numbers to call in and ask Dr. Wolf a question, now's the time, 877-876-5227, that's the U.S., and in Canada and the U.S., 888-815-9756. There is a direct line, 530-876-3222. Or like most of you are doing, and there's four questions in the queue here, radio@vocalprofiling.com. So you can ask a question, and we'll see if Dr. Wolf can enlighten us more. This is, even your words are so full of truth and integrity and wanting to help. You know, we have people who come on the show and they're just spouting words because they haven't really lived it. So I listen to people's words carefully, and I did a little test on yours while we're talking, and you're very authentic.
I appreciate that, Sherry. Thank you.
Well, I asked some other questions, and we'll ask some audience questions. They're kind of, the four that we have so far are, they really need help. So they're kind of sad. I don't know whether to go to them first or not. I'll just ask you some of the questions here. If people buy your book, what can they expect? What do you expect they'll get out of it about your sharing and your ideas? So, I guess the question is, why should they buy your book? It's beautiful, a lot of information. But what are they going to get out of it?
Okay. Yes. Well, the book is meant, and it's designed, and it's effective for people who read it and apply themselves to the process, including doing the exercises in the book, to for people to transform their lives, for people to live more deeply from, I'll call it, their spiritual essence, which means that people will be more fulfilled. What that means is that could manifest also, for example, there's very practical communication techniques that people will become expert in listening, expert in expressing themselves boldly, powerfully, and at the same time sensitively and considerately, and in that way enhance and deepen the satisfaction of their relationships. Also, people will get, let's say, very practical insight into their emotional patterns and how to change them. For example, if someone is habitually irritable or resentful or bitter, well, by reading the book, these habits that have been there for years or decades, maybe lifetimes, they can turn that. They can transform that into being peaceful, calm, and joyful. If someone is conditioned to be very fearful in their life, or confused, or depressed, or sad, they'll get strategies, techniques about how to change that. That may be a fit of deep sadness and depression that would normally last 2 or 3 months, they'll get strategies that it'll last them maybe 2 or 3 hours. It's very powerful. And that in any area of our lives that we want to achieve goals, whether it's in relationships, finances, health, spiritual practice, community development, that by applying what's in the book, which is essentially drawing out what's in yourself, that you'll get acceleration. You'll get techniques, strategies, principles to accelerate accomplishing what you want to accomplish in your life.
We have two questions from the audience. And there's so much behind this one sentence. Are there rules about what to withhold when talking to people? Because sometimes people use the information against you, particularly in a work environment.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Well, that's, there's a lot of life experience and intelligence behind that question. I can hear that. Well, my response to that is, I wouldn't say there's hard and fast rules. I would say the key here, and I mean, this comes up so much in my personal coaching and my seminars. The key here is about consciousness, about conscious choice. That, and by that I mean that, yeah, there's so much we could share at every moment with everyone. And so naturally we need to use our discretion about what to share with who. Now in doing that, let's say in a healthy, powerful life, we want to use that discretion from a place of choice rather than a place of fear. Okay, I'm aware of what I'm withholding now. I'm aware of what I could share. I'm aware of the effects it might have. And here's what I'm choosing to share with this person at this time. And it comes from a place of self-trust, that I trust I'm going to make wise decisions. And that even if things don't turn out the way I want it to, I trust that I'm going to effectively handle whatever comes up. And so naturally there's discretion. Like if we're a parent, naturally there's going to be more things we share with maybe our adult children than with our 4-year-old children, naturally. So there's a difference between boundaries and walls. That naturally there's healthy boundaries that are some people we're more intimate with and we share at a deeper level of honesty than other people. We have healthy boundaries. That's a difference than putting up walls out of fear. Now, there's a lot more to say. I hope I've touched on some things that can help us reflect on that very thoughtful question.
Well, what I heard you say, I'll reflect back to you, is that people who know within them that they're okay don't have to fight back, bite back, or be defensive.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That it's a natural flow. It's a natural choice. And even if we make some mistakes, I'm calm and confident. I'm going to handle whatever the consequences are or whatever the responses are, and I'm going to learn from it. I'm going to learn from it.
Here's another question from an audience. Why would anyone want to be president? How can you mend the idea that at least half of the people eligible to vote aren't going to like you when you become president? Sometimes I feel that way.
Yeah.
Quite very... very poignant,
yeah.
People writing in tonight.
Yeah. Really.
I feel like half the people don't like you.
Yeah. Well, I guess, whether it's president or whether it's a corporate executive or whether it's carpenter or mother or father, I mean, that question for me really points to to what extent am I living for the approval of others? And I think that can be a very profound and productive question for each of us to ask. Now, because where we go a lot in transformative communication, in my coaching, the workshops, the seminars, is about living an authentic life. Living an authentic life where we're living from our integrity, we're living from inspiration, we're living from life purpose. Because here's the thing. If we live for the approval of others, and we try our best to get approval of others, the result, anyway, is going to be some people going to like us and people aren't. Some people are going to judge us favorably and some people are going to judge us unfavorably. Right? And that's going to happen anyway. And if we're living for the approval of others by putting on different masks and facades or whatever it is, then even if we do get some respect and appreciation and love, it's not going to be satisfying because it's not really for me. It's just for some show I'm putting out. Whereas if we live authentically, then still, some people are going to approve, and some people aren't going to approve, and some people are going to respect, and some people aren't. But whatever comes our way, whatever care, affection, love, appreciation comes our way, it's going to be deeply fulfilling because it's really for us. So whether it's president, because I know myself in my life, whatever positions, roles I've taken, a lot of people have appreciated, and some people have thrown stones. And so a core theme in self-development is increasingly living from authenticity.
You talked about your personal coaching sessions. How can people get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with me through phone, email, or website. One of my websites is davidbwolf.com. That's 10 letters, no spaces.
No E on Wolf?
That's David, B as in boy, and Wolf with no E at the end of Wolf, right? DavidBWolf.com. They can call my office phone. Can I give that number?
Absolutely.
That's 386-418-2037. And also by email. I founded an institute. The institute is called Sattva Tov Institute, and I know that's difficult for people to pronounce. I'll say a bit about Sattva Tov is made up of two words. The word Sattva is from the ancient Sanskrit language, and it means goodness, harmony, or enlightenment. And Tov comes from the biblical Hebrew, and it also means goodness. So we're endeavoring to bring harmony and enlightenment to the world through the programs of Sattva Tov Institute. Sattva Tov is spelled S as in Stephen, A, T as in Thomas, V as in Victor, A, T as in Thomas, O, V as in Victor, and E. So my email address is davidwolf. 9 letters, no spaces, at sattvatov.org or davidbwolf at windstream.net. And people can contact me to register for our seminars, to do personal coaching with me. I do personal coaching. I have clients all around the world from Florida, New York, California, India, New Zealand, Russia. And so I'll be glad if any of your listeners want to contact me.
So you can do the sessions right over the phone?
Yes. Actually, most of my coaching I do by phone, and it's supplemented by email correspondence. So people can write to me, and we do phone sessions. Of course, if we're in each other's vicinity, we can do some in-person sessions. However, I do probably 90% of my personal and corporate coaching by phone.
Where are you located?
I'm located in North Florida, in the area of Gainesville, Florida.
Okay.
That's my base.
We have some questions here, and we only have about 10 minutes left.
Okay.
Are there rules someone can follow to keep from getting run over in a relationship?
Well, I would say that there are principles. There are guidelines. I mean, I guess I'm hesitant to use the word rule because, you know, it's relationships more of an, it's so much of an art, and there's such personality and individuality. So this question points to the principle of assertiveness. And to avoid getting run over, we want to be good at establishing healthy boundaries in a way where we ourselves are not aggressive or obnoxious. At the same time, in a way where the people we're in relationship with, they get that we're firm, we're powerful, that they get the message to respect us. We don't send that message out of fear. It's not that we're creating fear. Out of love, though, it's said that we train people how to treat us. We train people how to treat us. And so if I find a pattern, I'm constantly getting run over in relationships, I want to look at, or if I'm coaching someone, I'll help them look at, how are you creating that in your life? What is it about you that you're creating that? And we'll work on strategies to change that, to create more effective boundaries. And because if someone's constantly getting run over, that's probably living in fear, intimidation, probably building up resentment. That's no fun.
Here's a question from Doug. My mother is a whiner, and I just can't get around her guilt-ridden demands, so I find myself not going around. I don't want to be that kind of son. Any suggestions?
Okay.
There's some tough ones here tonight.
Yeah. Okay, so Doug, my understanding is his mother tries to play the guilt trip. And again, this point, because here's the thing. No one can make us feel guilty or inferior without our permission. Okay? Now, if his mother is trying to do that, okay, well, that's her choice, or that's her conditioning. Doug, like if I was, based on what you read, if I was coaching Doug, I'd help him look at his boundaries, his integrity, his authenticity. That in his relationship with his mother, what could he do? How could he respond in a way that he feels deeply satisfied and fully responsible for his response? Not just his behavioral response, but his emotional response. Because again, Doug's mother does not have the power to make Doug feel guilty. It might seem like she does. But she can act, she can say this or that, and then Doug can choose to feel guilty, or he can choose to smile with compassion, and he can choose to comply and conform with some of her requests, and to reject others, and to decline or to accept. And I would coach him to get clear on what's his integrity, what's his boundaries, what does he want to do, what does he choose not to do, and to be emotionally clean about it, and to communicate that effectively to his mother. And that would probably be wonderful for her personal growth, too.
Well, personal or emotionally clean about it. You know, it's like your husband bugs you to go to a party, and so you finally give in, but you make him miserable all the time you're there.
Right.
It's not emotionally clean.
Yeah, well, that would be an example of something that does not sound real emotionally clean. Right. And so if emotionally clean might look like transformative communication, assertive communication. Something like, we have what's called the WIN strategy. W stands for objective statement of what happened. Okay, so you've asked me 3 times to go to this party. I'm not inspired to go. W is what happened. I is inside feelings and thoughts, where we feel we use I statements. And the I statements are very important in communication as opposed to you statements. A you statement might be, you're so irritating and you're so annoying. Whereas an I statement might be something like, I'm disturbed that you're asking me even though I've said no twice. I'm not in the mood to go. I respect that you want to go, and I know that if I go, I'm not gonna be in good spirits. I am getting angry with you. See, there's a difference between you make me so angry, because if I say, oh, you make me so angry, where's the power for my anger?
The other person.
With the other person. Whereas if I say objectively, you asked me 4 times, I'm angry. Because right? if our anger is all tied up in being a victim and blaming, it's actually weak. Anger can be a very healthy emotion. And for it to be powerful and healthy, we need to take full responsibility for it. And so I'm angry that you've asked me four times. And then N, the N part of the win strategy, is needs and wants, where again, with I statements, I express, I'd like us to have a respectful, friendly, fun relationship. For that to happen, I need for you to respect my boundaries, that when I say no, you accept that the first time. Okay? So these are strategies to effectively communicate in a way that diffuses defensiveness and hostility instead of escalates it.
I think you've answered a couple of the questions, so I'm going to go to one that I don't think we've addressed. This is from Nikki. How do you deal with people who are very needy, who need constant appreciation while never giving back?
Yeah, okay. Well, it sounds like Nikki is asking about people who are really a drain. And that's important, because if we're surrounded by people who are an energy drain, it's going to be quite a challenge for us to feel enlivened and vital and full of vibrance in our life. And so, yeah, we want to surround ourselves with people who are really supporting us to be the best we could be, really life-enriching, energy-giving. And so either by changing our association, or by if people around us are a drain, then let's help them to transform. And so sometimes we can, if I'm surrounded by a lot of needy people, I can take a look at, what is it about me that I'm surrounded by all these needy people? So sometimes I might identify, maybe I have this need to be needed, right? Because things go from subtle to gross. Like whatever's manifesting in our life, in our relationships, in our finances, in our health, ultimately it's a reflection of our consciousness. And so if I'm surrounded by needy people, what is it about me that's attracting that? That's one place I might go in coaching someone.
This is not a simple yes or no, but it's a quick question because we only have a couple minutes left. My husband just stands and stares at me when he wants his way, and I won't comply. I don't want my children to learn this behavior. Are there exercises in the book that can help me with this?
Well, yes, there are. Yes, there definitely are. And in fact, I could guarantee if someone goes through the book, they'll have many effective strategies to deal with that, how to deal with that effectively for herself and for the legacy that she leaves for her children. So some of those strategies and techniques we've already mentioned. We've already mentioned about assertiveness, even something like the WIN strategy for assertive communication. So the answer is yes. And I want to mention also that at davidbwolf.com or sattvatov.com, the book is available there, and it's also available at amazon.com.
Amazon gives it 5 stars.
5 stars?
Yes.
That's exciting.
$11.21. It's eligible for free shipping, and there's only 3 left in stock.
Okay.
They do give a big message that it's not yet available on Kindle, the electronic book reader that we all love.
Okay.
There's a couple of descriptions here I want to read of the book. Approaches to relationship are revealing an effective and accessible model for self-fulfillment. But a couple of things that people wrote about. This is from S. Hempel.
Mm-hmm.
This book gave me the courage to work and improve my progress and personal growth. And another one from Miriam Mendoza. I really like this one.
Yeah.
An underlying theme of this book with which I completely resonate is that we already have the personal qualities to experience completeness, fulfillment, and happiness. This book provides a sublime process for uncovering those qualities. Thank you for being with us. We have lots of questions. I'll send them on to you if you'd like, and you can answer these folks personally. But
that would be fine. That would be fine. I'd be glad to receive those questions.
But they can also go out and buy the book.
Yes, yes, I encourage that. Also, at the website, we have a free CD, 7 Principles for Fulfilling Relationships, that anyone can download on the website.
And the book is supposed to, it says topics in the book, the 10 most common Roadblocks to Effective Communication.
Yes.
We have to go. Thank you, Dr. Wolf, for joining us. Thank you, audience, for being here. We'll come back next
Thank you, Sherry.
I say one thing I can just to make it sound like I'm in love with you. Maybe it's true. I wish you knew what I was going through. But then again, I see you grin, and I know that you know what you do.